Hello, everyone, and welcome to Beyond the Beats. It's Alec Prieto. I tell you what, thank you, everyone, for joining us. This is an incredible milestone for us. It's 10 episodes. I know it doesn't sound like too much, but this is something that Samir and I have been dreaming about doing for a very long time, so it's really nice to see something like this come to fruition. Samir, how are you feeling over there in New York?
Dude, I'm doing well. Alec, I completely agree with you, dude. We've made it, bro. We are here. We are at 10 episodes, and it's so cool. Like, it's just so cool to see, you know, how our show is just growing, you know, week over week, and people are interacting with us more online, and we just have a lot of really good things planned for the show. But thank you guys again for joining us for a very special episode, episode 10. And coincidentally, I feel like this episode had lined up perfectly with a lot of huge things happening in the EDM world.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, and that was totally not planned. I wish we had the foresight to plan something like this. But for those of you guys that, I don't know, have been living under a rock in the EDM world, Ultra Miami just happened. So a large portion of this episode will be covering the Ultra experience. But there's, you know, a crap load of new music to go through.
For sure.
From likes of Dog Blood, Seven Lions, Jaws, Charmy. List goes on and on, you know, and then there's other things. We talk about the EDC Las Vegas lineup there. I mean, there's what a great diverse lineup, surprising
yeah,
sets.
So excited.
Right? Like, I just, oh God, I can't wait. It's going to be absolutely amazing. Then Billboard releases their second edition of the top 100 dance artists. That's pretty big for Billboard to be continuing such a thing.
Right.
Then we have the Anti-Plo moment, and we've got our two classics. What are we listening to? Which we're actually going to do a little bit of a switch up this week, and we're going to do on the sets from Ultra. We've picked a couple sets that we'll talk about, and then we've got two, as always, just fantastic artists that we're watching this week. But Samir, let's go quickly through the new music so we can get to the Ultra. You know, what the fans really probably want to hear about is our thoughts on Ultra. But this is kind of tying into it, but Martin Garrix just released a new song, Mistaken, which I, correct me if I'm wrong, believe he opened with at Ultra.
Alec, yeah, I think you're absolutely right, dude. Brand new song from Martin Garrix and Matisse and Setco. It's called Mistaken, like we've already said. It's featuring Alex Reese. You know, just here's the thing, man. I love when Matisse and Setco team up with Martin Garrix to do a song because it's always going to be a good song. And I feel the same way about this song. And I sometimes feel like Martin Garrix's music can be a little bit cheesy sometimes, you know what I mean, with the lyrics and, like, you know, the synths that he uses. But I really like this song, and I love when Matisse and Setco get involved. I will say that I like the club mix of this song better than I like the original, but you really can't go wrong, you know, with either track that you listen to. It's just that classic Martin Garrix, Matisse and Setco, Stamped Records sound. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you there. I think, you know, it's got that melody that they have in is very much kind of a Martin Garrix and Matisse and Setco, you know, trademark. Well, it's not quite trademarked, but, you know, not in a legal sense, but it's something that you can identify them by.
For
it's got
sure.
That melody on the drop there, which I absolutely love. I thought this was great. You know, it can be a little cheesy, but, you know, for me, it's not obviously something. You know, we're not the main stage crowd, so we're not always going to be, you know, playing this out. But this is a really great song, and definitely people should go check it out.
Absolutely.
Definitely. So moving forward, we've got another song, All You Need to Know by Griffin Slander. And I haven't heard about this vocalist, have you, Samir? But Kaylee Lehman or Callie? I believe it's Kaylee. But
I believe it's Kaylee as well. Yeah, I've never really heard of her before either, dude. And Alec, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this song, man. Like, what did you think of this collab?
You know, I mean, to be honest, I was a little bit disappointed, actually. I liked the song. I thought it was decent. I thought it was good. But I wanted a little bit more. It just didn't quite entertain me throughout the whole song. Did you get that similar type of feeling?
Alec, I don't know what it is about this song. Like, I remember seeing, like, when it was first kind of teased online on their social media pages, that Griffin and Slander coming out with this song. Two artists that I never really thought would come together to do a track. And I don't know why, dude. I feel like it fell flat on both ends. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I didn't
get
much of a Slander sound, and I really didn't get much of a Griffin sound. Like, it just sounded kind of generic, and it just didn't sound like something that either of them produced or even worked on, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you there. It just didn't quite have, You know, I guess they were going for maybe somewhat of a combined style, right, rather than splitting parts of the song up and making it a little bit more clear who had more influence over what part of the track. But it really did, I agree, that I think it falling flat is a pretty good, you know, summary of how I feel too. It's just not really something special. It didn't really get me going in any way. Listeners, go check it out, and you know, I'd be interested to see what, you know, everyone thinks out there. But I don't know, for me this track was just a bit of a disappointment.
Completely agreed, Alec. Yeah, I'm 100% with you, man. It's definitely not a song that I think I'm gonna like revisit or be pumped about if I hear it live, you know.
Definitely not. On the other hand, though, this is a song.
Dog.
You already know where I'm
blood.
Going.
Dude, another track from Skrillex and Boys Noize, who I, first of all, we're going to be talking a lot about Dog Blood here on the show this week, just because these guys are making some fucking moves, baby. But Turn Off the Lights, another great track from Dog Blood. However, I will say that, Alec, I don't know if you noticed this, man, but on the drop, I felt like the low end and like the kick of the song was kind of missing. I feel like the kick didn't really have that oomph, you know? What did you think?
Yeah, you know, I actually haven't thought about that until you brought it up, but I could see what you're talking about. It's definitely something I'll have to go and take another listen to in terms of that piece. But I think I know what you're talking about just off the top of my head, you know, because I listened to the song a couple times before. Yeah, I don't know, maybe... I don't know, maybe there's something there in terms of it being live, it might sound better, you know?
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded good during their ultra set. Like, it seemed like the crowd was really enjoying it. So, yeah, I get it. I get that.
Right. I mean, were you just listening to it over your headphones or on speakers?
Yeah, I was listening to it through my headphones.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's something to do with it. But, you know, that's a very, very good point to bring out. You know, definitely something to look at in the future. But overall, you like the track? Because I did. I thought it was a good track.
Yeah, I think besides, like, the, you know, like, the drop, like, the kick and the drop kind of falling flat for me, I thought it was a good track. You know what I mean? Just super, super talented dudes just doing a good thing, man. I love it. And I can't – I think this is going to be a big year for Dog Blood, Alec. I'm just going to put that out there right now.
Definitely.
So, yeah, we'll definitely talk about that more as we go on in the show, bro. But dude, Bass, Nectar, Peekaboo, who we're huge fans of, put out this song called Illusion. Dude, I think this song was like very nicely evened out between both of them working on it. Like I feel like I can hear both of their influences in this track.
Yeah, I think this is an example of a really nice collaboration there, where the two styles came together very nicely, and they created a pretty, you know, pretty original song. You know, it wasn't too similar to anything else, and I thought this was a really nice thing. I mean, hopefully they do some more stuff moving forward, because I have a feeling the crowd reception to the songs could be pretty positive on both ends too.
Totally.
Because I know Bass Nectar fan.
Totally
right,
agreed.
Exactly. Yeah, so this was a great song. Great song overall. Hopefully it gets good reception on both ends. Because I'll be interested to see. Bass Nectar fans are quite, you know, they're pretty picky, I feel like. So, because I'm not the biggest of Bass Nectar fans, so I don't, you know, I really like them, but I'm not crazy.
Yeah,
you know, like
I'm
some
the same
people
way.
Are.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see how it goes, you know, and I don't mean crazy in a bad way. I won't get any angry Twitter fingers coming at me. No, it's not crazy in a bad way.
For sure, dude.
Really into it.
Yeah. Moving on, though, to another fantastic collaboration, Seven Lions and Kill the Noize put out this track called The Blood. Dude, did you get a chance to listen to this track? Because this shit is fire.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This thing went hard.
Yeah. And again, you know, we talked about this with Peekaboo and Bass Nectar, but I feel like, again, with this song here, The Blood by Seven Lions and Kill the Noize, both of their influences on this track were easily picked out, but they were able to meld together very, very well. And this is definitely a track I'm going to keep listening to, because this shit is fucking amazing.
I'm glad that he gets the Samir stamp of approval.
I'm super passionate about this song. Love this track.
I could tell. Yeah, no, I again, like, to take a saying out of your book, I 100% agree. Really do agree with you on this one. This is a really great song, another great collaboration. And you know, it just goes to show. We'll talk maybe a little bit more about Seven Lions later on. I have a point I'd like to bring up about him and why he's, you know, doing so well recently.
Interesting. All right. Sounds good,
but
man.
Yeah, you'll see how I'll tie this in. I'm excited to share it with you.
I'm pumped.
Yeah, definitely. You know, this one I put on your radar. I feel like this didn't really get much attention initially, and I don't know if it is right now because it was, you know, last week that this was released. But Jaws came out with, I've never really heard of these people. Summer Camp?
No, never.
Me neither. I'd like to look a little bit more into them. But he came out with this collaboration called Dance Floor, and it's actually available for free download right now, by the way, listeners. So
nice.
If you like the song, go on SoundCloud and download it. Hopefully that's still available. But what do you think of the song?
Alec, yeah, I was really surprised when I heard Jaws, you know, put out this kind of house song. But then when I, you know, remembered to some of his previous releases, like some of the tracks from The Wise and the Wicked, which is his full feature album. Then I remember that he put out some house songs on that album as well. And, you know, I know that Jaws has an affinity towards house music. He played a little bit of it when I saw him at Creamfields 2018 in the UK. So, you know what, man? Great, great song. But you're right, Alec. I feel like this track has not gotten that much attention or traction, you know?
No, definitely. And to be honest, it doesn't really seem like he's been pushing it that much either. I don't know. For whatever reason, maybe it was just an obscure time to be releasing it, and the fact that also he didn't play at Ultra at Ultra this year, right?
No, he did not.
So maybe it kind of got overshadowed in the foreshadow of Ultra, but definitely worth a go. Listen, I really liked it for one, so I think this was a solid song. Not my favorite of his most recent songs, but definitely a good one and worth playing in a DJ set.
For sure, dude. Completely agreed. And, dude, moving on to some more house music, we got Chami and Ibranovsky with the new track called Omega. I'll be honest, man, I'm a big fan of Chami, but I just did not like this song that much.
Yeah, you know, I had a feeling you'd say that. I enjoyed it. I think, you know, what's interesting for me is that I really do believe here that Ibranovsky was the majority of the influence in this song.
Yeah.
Because I've listened to a few of his other tracks, and it's definitely got that kind of, I don't want to say weird, but for lack of a better term, kind of like weirder vibe to it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. And I like weird, you know, dude. It's not like I don't like weird. I don't know why, but this track just didn't click for me for some reason.
Right, exactly. I completely agree. Because I actually like Ibranovsky's, I've got quite a few of his other songs I really do like. But it's just definitely, I just meant that more as a point or a footnote of, you know, that not really being Charmy's influence. I'm not entirely sure what happened there, but I wasn't the biggest fan. But, you know, not every track's going to be golden, and Charmy's just been, you know, crushing it recently. So,
oh, for sure.
You know, I'm willing to chalk this one up to maybe some experimentation and quite plan out the way they had planned it to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's completely fine. And listeners, look, we're passing our judgments here quickly on the show at the beginning. But all this new music will easily be found in our show notes, which you can access through your favorite podcasting app or Facebook. Check us out there. But, you know, we got a couple more songs that we want to quickly mention here for the new music section. Above and Beyond. All right. They put out a song called There's Only You, featuring somebody that they've worked with before on another mega hit song by them, Zoe Johnson, who they did We're All We Need before, like a couple years ago. I think it's been about 4 years now. But Alec, you know, I like the song, dude. I like Zoe Johnson. I feel like every time Above and Beyond and Zoe Johnson team up, bro, they do a good job. They put out some great music.
Me too. I definitely agree with that. You know, she's just got great voice, you know, and they work really well with her, you know, and I really like the club mix of this. I would listen to the club mix more than I would you know, anything else.
Totally agree.
And that goes for a lot of trance for me, to be perfectly honest. I want the club mix.
Totally agreed. Right there with you. Flume, Alec, another more music from this guy, dude. We can't stop him, man. He's like the freaking Energizer Bunny out here. Flume putting out another track called Friends, okay? But this one, you know, I appreciate Flume's unique style, you know, his you know, his ability to push boundaries and, you know, kind of steer away from like what's popular. But I don't know, maybe the lyrics just weren't for me, man. I just didn't enjoy the lyrics as much. I just wish this song was released as an instrumental. What do you think?
You know, you bring up a good point. I'm not the biggest fan of the vocals, you know, of the rap, but
yeah.
I like it though. I do overall really like the song, and I kind of like the direction that he's going. I like the song, so I might have to disagree with you slightly there, but I could definitely see what you're saying in terms of you preferring the instrumentals. You know, I think maybe I would like that even better than with the rap on top. But, you know, as you said before, he's like the Energizer Bunny right now. I'm hoping to see more stuff come out from him and more sets to be announced.
Yeah. I mean, dude, you know he's playing at Red Rock soon, right? He, like, just announced that show.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's going to be a great show.
Yeah, I think he's calling, like, Flume and Friends or something like that. So, yeah, listeners, if you guys get a chance to go check out Flume at Red Rocks, I mean, first of all, how lucky are you? Because Red Rocks is such an amazing venue, and then on top of that, you got Flume just destroying it out there, man, setting the vibe. That's going to be a really good show.
Yeah. Definitely. Now, this last song here that I think, you know, just the last one, I was a little bit confused by this, but Dylan Francis, Change Your Mind. What do you think?
I didn't like it, man. I don't know what Dylan Francis did in this song, because I feel like I just got like zero Dylan Francis influence. He worked with the band on this song, and the band, it's escaping. The name of the band is escaping my head here, but I don't know, man. I feel like I just didn't get any Dylan Francis influence. Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. That this one was kind of out of the blue here for me. I don't really understand. And the band I believe that you're looking for, it's called literally is called Lovely the Band.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right on that one, Alec. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean they have a lot of hits in terms of, you know, I've never really listened to them, so maybe the listeners have, but I just didn't I don't quite understand, especially after the string of releases he's had prior to this. I didn't really understand where this song came from and why it
exactly
came about. So I don't know if we've missed something, but, you know, I don't really understand what's going on.
I don't know either. I hope Dylan Francis is not going to, like, revert back to, like, what he was doing in, like, 2017 and 2018 with those releases. Like, I hope this man sticks to just putting out some more fire tracks, some more Moomba, you know, some more trap and, you know, anything else. You know, if he's got another collab coming down with Alice in Wonderland, would love to hear that, because I want to see that tour so bad. But yeah, that pretty much wraps up the new music section, dude. Wow, I mean, we had a lot of new music and just some massive releases from huge names. And listeners, again, you're going to be able to find all these links in our show notes, so just definitely be sure to check that out. But guys, I want to start this next section, news and culture, by saying welcome to festival season. It's officially kicked off.
Officially, man. It's so nice to be back in this time of year.
I know.
Even
I'm
the
so
DJs,
excited.
You know, everyone gets excited.
Yeah, I'm yeah, beyond pumped up, Alec. I'm beyond pumped up. And, you know, Ultra Music Festival that takes place in Miami, Florida, one of the biggest EDM festivals in the world, one of the most world-renowned, has just finished this last weekend of March. And we're going to talk about it because there is a lot to talk about. And, you know, the good, there's some good, there's some bad, and then there's the ugly. So, Alec, which way do we want to start, dude?
Let's start with the ugly, because I prefer to end on a good note, right?
I love that.
I think that's a good way to start. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's nice.
Sounds good, man. Yeah.
Where do I start? Because there's a couple ugly things. And to be perfectly honest, I think I'm also starting to like this just because this is kind of how the structure of Ultra went. It went from ugly to bad to good, to really good, actually.
That's a really good way to explain that. Yeah, I think over the course of 3 days, a lot of the big kinks that they were experiencing, for some part, they were kind of eased out, you know? They were kind of figured out, and I think that the weekend, the last day of the festival, like, everything really came together. And we did not get there so easily. And gosh, I mean, if you guys were reading some EDM blogs or kind of keeping up with what's going on the different subreddits like r/UMF, which is dedicated to Ultra Music Festival, you would know that there's some serious issues with Ultra. But let's talk about this, man. The day one shuttles, the free shuttle services that Ultra Music Festival is providing to get people from the different parts of Miami into Virginia Key, where the festival is taking place. Like, from what I've read and from what I've seen and the reactions that we've gotten, going there was fine, you know? Like, the shuttles would drop people off at either, you know, the main part of the festival where you can find the main stage, the worldwide stage, you know, the radio stage and so on. And then the shuttle will also take you over to Resistance Island, which is Ultra's techno brand, techno and house music brand that was kind of separated from the rest of the main festival for, you know, reasons due to space. And, you know, I'm sure there were other some logistical issues where they weren't able to keep those two parts of the festival more cohesive. But Ultra did try to do the best that they could with the space that they were given. And, you know, Virginia Key, it looks amazing. It looks like a nice space. And it's much, much bigger than Bayfront Park, which I have repeatedly talked about on this show, saying that I just don't think that it was big enough. Like, I feel like Bayfront Park has, you know, or Ultra has outgrown Bayfront Park. So they have moved now to a bigger venue against their will because the city of Miami had, you know, kicked them out from downtown Miami. They were kind of sick and tired of the noise and, you know, just the debauchery that Ultra brings. So they were kicked off to kind of this remote island that's about 3 miles off the coast of the Miami city here. But anyways, we quickly touched upon how the day one shuttle, the shuttles would bring you into the festival, drop you off. And then those same shuttles are supposed to take you back onto into Miami and then drop you off at the various locations that they were picking people up. But there was a serious, serious meltdown with the day one shuttles on the way back getting people out.
Yeah, it was really just, you know, I don't really know what happened. I think, you know, as I said, this is part of the reason why I didn't want to go, was just the logistical issues that are bound to happen when you switch locations.
Yeah.
Right.
They barely had any time to put everything together, you know, with, you know, Ultra staying in Bayfront Park. They're kicked out of Bayfront Park, the appeals to the city of Miami. But once they realized that they were being kicked out of Bayfront Park officially, they really had to spring into action and get this shit sorted out.
Yeah, they didn't have too much time to sort everything out, right? And also, I just feel like as great as the, you know, as Virginia Key is, it probably isn't the best location in terms of, like, transportation logistics, right?
Right.
I mean, there's a limited, yeah, exactly. There's a limited amount of, you know, entrances and exits, you know, that there really isn't that much you have to do. So if anything gets behind, it's just like a trickle-on effect. And I think also, you know, Bayfront Park was a lot easier to get to for the people who weren't, you know, native to Miami, whereas this place was probably a little bit more confusing for people to get to. So if you've got people driving and then parking further on off the from the venue, then they're, you know, they're just causing more traffic and all these types of problems. And I think that's kind of what everyone was blaming it on. But it was good to see that they got the shuttle system sorted by the end of day three.
Yeah, it definitely was. But I mean, you know, I just want to quickly revisit, you know, what happened here with the day one shuttles. And so from what I was reading, right, there was pretty much no organization in terms of getting people onto the shuttles going back. Like, the Ultra staff wasn't really helping out. The police really didn't have much information because, you know, they're the police. They're there to just keep an eye, make sure everything was going smoothly in terms of keeping people safe. But, you know, Ultra staff was really, really not helping people out. And then eventually I think those buses left the island. And, you know, some of them left empty and people were forced to walk back from Virginia Key back into the city of Miami. And that's about a 3 mile walk, dude. It's quite a lot. But, you know, luckily we had a festival goer from Chicago. We have Mike, who's going to give us his firsthand account of what he experienced. Kind of an interesting story of how he got back that night, the first day, you know, after the first day of Ultra. Why don't you guys take a listen to what he had to say?
Hey, what's up, boys? This is Mike from Chicago. I went to Ultra last night. Complete mayhem leaving. I mean, the festival is great, but getting out of there is just an utter disaster. You got thousands of people just wandering aimlessly. Like, there's no staff anywhere telling anyone where to go. People are just lined up at gates hoping they open and really no clue what's going on. We finally managed to get outside to the street, which was a 3-lane highway. Turn into a 2-lane highway, but anytime a shuttle would roll up, you got like 1,000 people trying to jam pack on it. No control, cops aren't helping, there's no Ultra staff anywhere. Eventually, We finally took it upon ourselves to bribe someone. We gave this dude $50 to let us in his truck. This guy was great. The roads turn into a single lane, and there's thousands of people pouring out of this place. They had a taxi cab pickup area, but that ended up being closed, and they just told everyone to walk the bridge. And the bridge is about a 3-mile walk, and you're looking at a 3-lane highway with people everywhere just pouring out of this place, walking up the bridge, down the bridge. People passed out. It was pretty rough, but luckily we found our dude Dave in the truck. He was a food vendor. We're going to go find him today. All right, boys. Have a good one.
Yeah, I mean, just it sounds nuts, but you know, he did update me and tell me that the shuttles were much, much better on day 2 and day 3. So luckily they were able to figure that shit out.
Yeah, that, again, like, it's just never nice to do that because it kind of ruins people's second day. And, you know, aside from the fact, like, that just shouldn't happen for a festival the size of Ultra. But, again, you know, not to rip on them too hard, but I'm glad that they sorted this out.
Absolutely.
But I was also reading that another potential cause of the shuttle issues, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, but there was a tree that was on fire?
Yeah, Alec. Yeah, good point, man. I mean, I think that, yeah, from what I've heard, and it's all speculation as to how this tree caught on fire. I mean, really, we don't know. You know, there's people saying that could have been caused by a cigarette, could have been caused by some of the firework fallout, and we'll get into that in a little bit as well. But basically, yeah, there was a tree that caught on fire, and it was a tree that was kind of, I think, fenced off from the crowd. So it's not like people were able to get near it. And luckily, nobody was hurt. Thank goodness. But yeah, I think that also caused a little bit of a panic, and, you know, it didn't help with the situation of trying to get people off of Virginia Key after the first day of Ultra.
Right. Exactly. It's just, yeah, that was just crazy. I mean, you saw some of the Twitter videos.
Yeah,
of the
dude,
fire
it's insane.
Going off.
I know. Yeah.
Absolutely insane, you know. But is there anything else you want to cover in terms of the ugly? I think, of course, we have to cover this because this was pretty ugly.
We cannot forget about this, man. This was fucking embarrassing. I don't even know what to say, dude. I mean,
have a little anti-plur moment here. Go on,
Oh God, ultra. All right. First of all, I know this year didn't sell out. I know you guys were close, but I know that this year did not sell out for you guys. But was there really any need to disrespect your festival goers by putting a fucking KFC ad on the main stage for 5 minutes and on the live stream as well to everybody who was watching at home, the millions of people? I mean, what the hell was that to get Colonel Sanders?
I am Colonel Sanders. I am everywhere. Stay there. Are y'all hungry for some beats?
The mascot of Kentucky Fried Chicken, the food chain, the fast food chain, put on, and I'm really, really trying to emphasize here the air quotes that I'm putting on here, a 5-minute set, and literally he only played one song, of Colonel Sanders, you know, on the main stage playing this KFC-esque themed song that was not only shown to all the main stage goers, but also on the Ultra live stream for everybody to see at home. And it was just embarrassing, dude. I mean, there's a video on YouTube. I think somebody had filmed pretty much the entire thing. And you could even tell, like, right from the get-go, as soon as, you know, DJ Colonel Sanders had gone on, that the track, I think there was something wrong with the track that was playing. Like, either it was playing on two decks, and one of the decks was slightly behind. And so that was causing, like, this weird kind of delay effect. But then they're able to get sorted out. But also on top of that, the visuals that they had for this song were just not in sync at all. Like, it took the production team pretty much like 2.5 minutes to get the song working properly and to also get the visuals working properly as well. But it was just embarrassing. Like, it'd be different if they actually passed out like extra crispy chicken after the set. That'd be dope. It'd be different if they had KFC, you know, as a food vendor on the island, maybe. It'd be different if perhaps like they had marshmallow like underneath the you know, the Colonel Sanders helmet. But no, they seriously insulted EDM, and it took commercialization of EDM to a whole other level that was completely insulting. That's it. That's all I have to say on that.
Whew. Well, thank you for that. But no, I'm with you here on this one. I really also agree with, you know, the point that you brought up about if maybe Marshmello had been under the hat, or just any actual DJ, like, you know, if they paid a DJ and, you know, partnered with him to like basically be Colonel Sanders for like the opening, you know, 5 minutes of his set or whatever, and then go into his regular set, his or her regular set, I should say, that'd be fine, right? Like, you know, that's absolutely fine to me. Or even if Colonel Sanders, it was actually like a real DJ, like actually someone who was a good
man,
DJ.
Yeah, man, something, just something. But like, literally, dude, I feel like I was watching a five-minute ad about extra crispy chicken from KFC. Like, it's just ridiculous. I'm surprised, like, at the end they didn't do, like, hey, grab a big box for only $20 after the show or something. Like, I'm surprised they didn't put that at the end of the quote unquote set from DJ Colonel Sanders. But god damn, man, it was so embarrassing to watch that.
Yeah, it was awkward. No one enjoyed it.
Yeah,
you know, I think it was just it was an interesting idea, executed very poorly. You know, I'm still not a fan of, you know, and this was actually brought up by a couple DJs. I'm still not a fan of, you know, of a corporate buying main stage time, right? Like, you know, this isn't just on any stage. This is on the main stage.
Exactly.
And you've got people who, you know, up-and-coming artists and people who would absolutely kill even for just for 10 minutes to be on that stage.
Right.
And they gave it away to some corporate sponsor. And that really, you know, pissed off a few DJs as they were saying, hey, like, you know, that isn't cool. There are people who, you know, work the butts off to get on there, but then you have someone who's not even a DJ and it's just a corporate money basically buying that amount of time like it's an ad space, on there. So
it's just embarrassing, man. I mean, I know Marshmello had said something about it, but then I think he deleted his tweet. I know Alice in Wonderland said something about it as well. It's just, dude, it's just embarrassing. There's no other way to say it.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. If only they, you know, had kind of just thought this out better. You know, if you're going to, you know, I think this is a good lesson in general. It's like, you know, if you're going to, you know, take over the attention channel of a consumer, right? Especially if it's nothing related to what your product is.
Right.
And you're doing this as some type of branding play, right? Or some type of PR play. Make sure that it's done in good taste and it's done well, and that it's actually going to provide something of an experience for the people who are there and the people who are watching, because this just added absolutely nothing.
Right, dude. Right on, man. I completely, completely agree with you. And, dude, let's just hope in future iterations of Ultra and pretty much any festival that we go to that we will not have to suffer through that sort of, that level of bullshit.
No, yeah. I hope not. I really hope not. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah.
But moving on, getting slightly better.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, that's the ugly of Ultra 2019. Let's move on to the bad. Alec, I mean, I was reading some things. You know, obviously when you have a new venue, there are going to be some things that you're not really going to be able to accurately test and that you're going to have to do some modifications for in future iterations of the festival, or, you know, of any product, basically, right? Any product that gets upgrades in future iterations. And Ultra is a product. And so, you know, there were some complaints about sound bleed between some of the stages. Like, I know that the live stage was experiencing some sound bleed with the radio stage, and, you know, during breakdowns of songs, you can hear the other stages around you. Like, that's no fun. You know, like, when you go to a stage to hear something like trance music, you don't want to hear the trap that's being thrown down on the stage next door, because that's not the vibe that you're looking for.
Totally, I agree. But then again, my question is, why are people surprised? I mean, I guess this is people who hadn't been before, but the same thing happened at Bayfront Park.
Yeah, but I feel like at Bayfront Park, dude, it wasn't that bad. You know what I mean? Like, when we were at the radio stage, I feel like the interference from the live stage was pretty minimal. Don't you think?
Yeah, but I feel like when I was at the live stage, we heard from other stages.
Huh, that's really interesting, man. I don't know why. I just feel like I didn't experience that as much, but, you know, that could definitely be the case. I think that this year, just the way that the festival was set up and the space that they were kind of working with Virginia Key, I think that it was really hard for them to kind of separate that sound bleed between the different stages.
Yeah, you know, and that's part of the problem, I guess, just with having the stages and the amount of stages that they do, right? And there's also a thing in terms of sound, right, and the positioning of it. You know, I'd be really interested to talk to somebody who's like a logistical planner for these type of things with the stages. But, you know, I definitely sympathize with them because
for sure.
This is the first time that they've done it on this venue, but you know, you've got to do a better job, just because, as you said, if you're watching trance, you don't want to be hearing trap. And they were playing a lot of trap on the main stage.
Yeah, they were. They were playing a lot of trap on the main stage, and you know, I don't know what else to say, man. I think that it's just a shame that you know, people were experiencing this and reporting this level of sound bleed here, you know. And I've also been reading that some of the stages that they hosted some of these big names in, like Odessa and Deadmau5, who were on the live stage, I heard that the live stage was apparently pretty tiny for the acts that they were bringing into there.
Interesting. Like, I know you were reading. Tell me a little bit more about this, because I didn't really read too much on this, but I could definitely tell it didn't look very large on the stream.
Yeah. You know, I mean, look, dude, you know, you had Deadmau5, who debuted his Cube 3.0, this brand new Cube tour that, you know, people just go absolutely crazy over. So, you know, it's going to draw a huge crowd. You got Odessa, who is probably one of the biggest acts in the scene right now. You know, you got a State of Trance, who's also in that stage as well. So you got Armin van Buuren, but then, you know, they basically took the megastructure from, you know, previous years at Ultra and then kind of chopped it, and so they made it smaller, but then they called that the live stage and then put all these big acts in there, you know. And so, you know, we experienced this, Alec, when we saw Eric Prydz, and when you saw Armin, I mean, the crowd was coming out of the megastructure, right?
Yeah, it was. It was just completely oversized. And that was the megastructure, which is huge.
Yeah, exactly. So now picture that, right? Picture a smaller version of the megastructure. Mm. Picture a crowd coming all the way out. Luckily, that year at Ultra, you know, there wasn't that bad of sound bleed for the megastructure if you're kind of staying outside. However, now you got the live stage kind of next to the radio stage and also next to Ultra Worldwide, and you're getting sound bleed. And, you know, the stage is not as big, and people are hanging now outside more towards the back of the stage as well. So it's not a good setup. It wasn't a good setup. And I'm surprised that they hosted such big names in that stage like that. I mean, come on, those acts draw huge crowds.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. I'm really surprised about this, you know. And I don't know if this is anything related to it, but is that why Jai Wolf canceled?
So that's a really interesting point, dude. I'm glad you brought that up. I do think that is why Jai Wolf had canceled. I think that the production really wasn't up to snuff, you know, really wasn't up to what he wanted to be performing there. I think Jai Wolf is also kind of a perfectionist when it comes to these things. You know, he wants to put on an experience for his fans, and I think that, you know, he wasn't going to be able to accomplish that at Ultra. And it's a shame. You know, I know a lot of people were looking forward to Jai Wolf, but unfortunately he didn't make it.
Yeah, because I saw he said that it was logistical issues, which is what makes me to make that, you know, kind of leap to that. I mean, I don't believe he's confirmed that, and I don't think he ever will, but that it does seem likely that that might be the reason why he had to cancel. And I think it's just, you know, Ultra's just got to do a better job. But I don't know what they're going to do for the future. I mean, do you have any ideas for them in the future? Because I don't see how they're going to get around this problem in the future.
Alec, I'm really, really not too sure, man. I wish I knew. I wish I saw the space of Virginia Key to know what they were working with, but unfortunately, you know, or maybe fortunately, we didn't go to Ultra this year. But I know that they've been receiving a lot of feedback, both good and bad, and this is definitely a big point. And I think that in future iterations of the festival, they're definitely going to address this. And who knows what they'll do, man? Maybe they'll knock out a stage, make room for you know, the other stages, and let those stages breathe a little bit, so to speak. But you know, we talked about Jai Wolf not being able to make his appearance, but dude, on top of that, and this is going to hurt me to say, and I know there were a lot of fans all around the world who were very hurt by this, but Prydz canceled all three of his Miami appearances, all of them. I mean, we were going to get the holy trifecta here, dude. You got Series D, back-to-back Adam Baer. You got Eric Prydz, who's going to be performing as part of the Estate of Trance lineup on the Sunday. And then you got Prida, you know, I talked about this tour before. You got Prida, he was going to do a show on Thursday at one of the clubs for Miami Music Week. But all appearances were canceled. He was apparently very, very ill. Hopefully he's feeling better for his upcoming appearances. But man, I mean, what a bummer to Prydz fans who, and I have a lot of friends who are Prydz fans, and they were texting me, we were talking about this, and they were all super bummed that he was not able to make any of his sets.
And he said it was for, you know, I don't want to make this assumption, not like I did with Jai Wolf, just because of the reasoning. But, you know, he said that there was health issues. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Because there's a health issue that he was dealing with. And I'm not really too sure on what exactly the issue is. But, you know, another thing to keep in mind here is that Prids is afraid of flying. He gets serious anxiety. And so normally when he tours, he will take a tour bus with him. So, you know, let's say he was feeling better for his Sunday gig. Unfortunately, the man lives in L.A. You know what I mean? He lives in California. He's not going to be able to drive cross country in his tour bus in time to make that show.
Huh. You know, I had no idea. Yeah. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, he has a massive, massive fear of flying. I mean, really, dude, like, seriously, when he goes to Europe, he's in Europe for the whole summer. Like, he flies, obviously, you know, how else are you going to get there? But he did Ibiza, you know, he did Creamfields, and he did, like, Ireland and Belfast. I mean, he did a lot of shows in the summer in Europe, and, like, then he'll come back. But he's not going to fly back and forth. He just does not like flying.
Interesting. So maybe, I don't know, I don't want to assume, again, that that's the reason, but, you know, that could be an interesting point. I had no idea that he was afraid of flying like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. He is, but, you know, really, really sorry to hear that, and, you know, but I'm looking forward to seeing him at EDC. But anyways, you know, moving on, just a couple of things here that we want to touch upon for Ultra. You know, I was also hearing that there were not that many water stations. I was, you know, there were some reports that people were waiting up to 30 minutes in line to fill up their Camelback or fill up their water bottles, which is quite surprising, man. I mean, it was a hot weekend out there in Miami, and it did not rain at all. You know, so the weather was not that cool. It was quite hot.
Yeah, that's strange because, you know, I feel like at Bayfront Park when we went, that they actually did a decent job.
Yeah.
You know, it could have been a bit better, but it was a decent job of having water stations pretty readily available and spread out. Was the issue more that there was only, you know, not enough water stations, or was it the, you know, did you hear whether it was the distribution of water stations throughout Virginia Key?
I think it was both. I think it was like there were not enough water stations on, you know, either side of the island. I heard that the Resistance Island, so like the techno side of the island, actually the weight was a lot less over there. But I heard that there were not that many water stations, and on top of that, I heard that you know, there's nobody really manning it, and so just lines were not moving that fast either.
Right.
Yeah.
That's not good. You know, we've previously talked about this on the podcast, but you've got to have water readily and easily accessible.
Completely
to people
agreed.
Coming, whether you're, that's just not acceptable. So hopefully they sort that. You know, and you've got to give a shout out to EDC for that because they do. I feel like they do a very good job. Of the water stations. Anything else on the bad for you, Samir? I mean, there's quite a few things there.
Yeah, so, sorry, one last thing, you know, I think that, you know, and we've been seeing this a lot from what Ultra has been posting on their social media posts or on their social media accounts here, but, you know, they were saying that they're really committed to, you know, going green, you know, making Ultra a little bit more greener, cleaning everything up, mm-hmm. and part of that initiative was really, really limiting the confetti and really limiting the fireworks and the pyro that was put on during the festival. And listeners, you will see, like, if you guys watch Ultra Music Festival sets from, like, 2018 and before, and then you watch the Ultra Music Festival sets from 2019 and onwards, you will see that the fireworks were kept to a minimum. The pyro was kept to a minimum as well. And I think especially after that tree had lit on fire after the first day, they pretty much stopped almost all fireworks for day two and day three.
I mean, is that necessarily a bad thing, though? I don't want to go on, you know, I don't personally consider that to be too bad.
Yeah, we can definitely go really deep into this conversation here. You know, I mean, I personally don't think it's that bad of a thing, but I think that a lot of people felt like, all right, here's another thing where Ultra was kind of cut back on, you know, first moving away from that amazing venue in downtown Miami to, like, now we have less fireworks, now we have less confetti, and, like, you know, the effects that make a stage or that make a set pop for some people.
Yeah, you know, that's a very good point. So, because to me, I wouldn't have minded that as much, but I do feel like, you know, it's easy to say that having not bought a ticket, you know, and making that trip out of there, right, you know, and having experienced, you know, Ultra before. So it's quite easy for me to say, you know, oh, it's not that bad. You know, I definitely really, I really do like the whole, you know, green aspect of it, not
me
just
too.
Because I think it's just good. But remember, too, they definitely had to clean that act up because of all the complaints from Miami. So
oh,
they don't
sure.
want to piss Miami off.
For sure. Absolutely. And
exactly.
You know, it's just great to see how active they're being in just, you know, keeping our planet Earth green. And I love that. I love that sort of initiative. So good on Ultra for that. And, you know, speaking Speaking of, I mean, was there anything else, Alec, that we wanted to touch upon here in this section of the bad for Ultra?
No, I think that's really it. I think we got everything covered on that. And I think really one last point on the green part is that, you know, maybe they could have thought of some other ways, right, to make these sets pop more. You know, I know, at least for the people who are not quite the closers, right, of the main stage, because they seem to go decently all out for that. But maybe had some type of, you know, additional lighting or something that would have made the stage pop out a bit more without, yeah, you know, harming the environment too much. Because I do agree, thinking about it now, it did look a little sparse on some of the sets.
Exactly. Yeah, I think a lot of people felt that way, man. But, you know, good on Ultra for you know, making sure that our planet Earth stays green. And, dude, speaking of the good, though, look, you have got to give it to Ultra that this was probably one of the best lineups that they've ever had. I mean, this lineup was stupid, stupid stacked.
Yeah, it was just just every stage had so many amazing people, you know, and the stream, unfortunately, can only capture a certain amount of them. But, you know, I think they did a good job in general with the stream as well. And the stream went well alongside with a fantastic lineup. You know, I think they really... from that perspective and that aspect of logistics, I think they did a really good job. What do you think about, so do you hear anything about how people found Resistance Island? Because that was something that really intrigued me when they said that they were going to do that.
Yeah, dude, I you know me, man, I'm a techno and house fan for sure. And, you know, I had people who were, you know, texting me because I was asking them, I wanted to get their opinion on it. They said that Resistance Island, like if you're a techno music and a house fan, they said that Resistance Island was the best part about Ultra. You know, it kind of had its own separate vibe from the fest, which could be a good thing or a bad thing. But, you know, you really felt like you were just, there was something special. There was something more done for the Resistance fans, the techno fans, the house music fans this year as compared to previous years. The only thing that sucked, though, is that if you're a fan of both, you know, more mainstream music and, you know, underground music or, you know, techno music or house music, you're going to have to walk about a mile to a mile and a half between those two parts of the island to get from one side to the other, which, you know, for someone like me, I find that I would probably be doing that walk quite a bit because I like a wide, you know, diverse range of music. But I know some people who just specifically go to Ultra for the Resistance lineups, and then this was perfect for them. And of course, you already know that they had some fantastic production on that island. I mean, you had Carl Cox again, just completely smashing it. Adam Baer, Charlotte DeWitt. I mean, dude, just fantastic stuff all around for the Resistance fans. I thought this was great.
Yeah, you know, I really like how the keeping true to that Resistance stage, you know, and they gave it its own channel on the live stream. I thought that was a really nice touch. Definitely did. But, you know, at the same time, man, like this is the great, but, you know, I hope they figure out a better balance between that and the more mainstream, right? It seems like you've got two extremities here. When I felt kind of bad, but when they were streaming Sophie, I don't know if you did you watch Sophie when she was on the
I did not, unfortunately. I didn't tune in early enough to catch Sophie. What happened with that, man? I know we talked about this a little bit.
Yeah, so like people just were not happy. I mean, no one was really dancing while watching her like there. And then the comments were just absolutely ripping into her, you know. And it
what happened? Well, I mean, what stage was she on?
She was at the Resistance stage. So she was there, and they were just it was just, but it was on the main stream, right? Like they cut to her on the main stream for about 20 minutes, you know, and people were not happy. But to be perfectly honest, man, I've never really listened to her, but it just didn't seem like a good set, and people who were there weren't even really enjoying it. But you know, I think it's a tough balance that they've got to do now, right? Because they've gone quite commercialized, and when they market, you know, Ultra Miami, I feel like they market it as quite the, you know, more mainstream, you know, EDM pop culture type of festival. And then when they go on the mainstream and they start showing, you know, more, not underground techno, but, you know, lesser known techno and techno in general, I think people have missed expectations. You know what I'm saying here?
Yeah. I hear what you're saying, man. That totally makes sense.
So, like, you know, while for the techno fans this is fine, there's a lot of people who are not really interested in this. And, you know, I don't think it's they've definitely got to do a better job of that, you know. And I think it's great that they want to give techno more of a, you know, a shout out, more to show it to more people and expand its base. But maybe there's a slightly better way to go about it than trying to. I think right now, just within terms of the fan base of Ultra, it's just the. It's a little bit too hard to merge it together and be able to go from like techno, oh, back to the main stage and going back to like, you know, David Guetta or something like that. I just don't think it's the right, you know, crowd that would be going to Ultra that would appreciate that. Maybe the techno people would, but I think the other people wouldn't as much.
Right. Interesting point, dude. Yeah, I didn't, you know, unfortunately I did not get a chance to catch Sophie, but I know what you're saying, and I know you tweeted at you know, at UMF TV to find out, you know, what happened with that as well.
To be fair, I just wanted to say, like, you know, this isn't necessarily a bad point. I know we were on the good of Ultra. I think this is I think it's great that they're doing with the techno. I'm just saying maybe to figure out some other ways to incorporate better into their stream, into how they market Ultra as a festival to people, because, you know, I think now it's getting so huge to the point where they've really got to start thinking about this stuff. So I think it's great. It's a great launching point, and I think this was a good start for them overall, and they had an amazing lineup with some amazing sets. But they've just got to do – it's just really more in the details now, I think, for Ultra going forward.
All good points here, man. Alec, were there any sets in particular that, like, really wowed you from Ultra this year?
You know, I have to say, I have to give a shout-out to Cosmic Gate. I thought they did a really nice job. I'm not sure if you got to catch them, Samir, but I thought that, you know, I've heard very good things. I thought they did a really good job with it. You know, I was pleasantly surprised. You know, it wasn't my favorite set of Ultra, but I thought it was a very good set. You know, it was something that I think they did a really good job of. You could tell everyone in the crowd was really enjoying it. And, you know, I'd definitely be down to go try and see them at some point. I just think they really did probably the best job that, you know, I've seen of recent, you know, trance artists in terms of controlling the vibe and going from, you know, from those light-hearted, more sing-along type of things to more of that pounding trance drop. So they did a really good job with that.
Right.
And then I have to say, Armin van Buuren absolutely crushed his set. I mean, that was just an unbelievable
set. Damn. Nice.
Unbelievable set.
Nice.
So shout out to the trance family there. And Samir, I already know that you're going to agree with me on this, but Dog Blood absolutely murdered their set too.
Holy crap, dude. That's all I got to say. I mean, we're going to really talk about this in a little bit here on the show, but wow, wow, wow. What a freaking amazing set, dude.
Great set. Fantastic to see them doing it again. And of course, we'll go into more detail about that. The other set that I was really, you know, you sent me the link today because I'm glad he released it. But I thought Mala's set was interesting. It was not quite his normal set, I don't think. I mean, but, you know, I really liked it. I thought it was really good. He was pretty creative with it. And he was playing some songs that I had not really heard before.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, dude. And that's what I love about Mala, is that I feel like he's always kind of like evolving his style. But he's evolving in his style in a way that makes sense. Like, he's not just like jumping to a new sound. You know, he's slow to try new things. And he figures out what works and what doesn't work. And I think I just love the calculated moves he makes when it comes to trying out new sounds.
Definitely, man. Definitely. You know, and those are really the people that kind of stuck out to me in terms of having really good sets. How about for you? Did you have anybody in mind? I'm sure there's going to be more. There's more people that I just can't think of at the moment, and we can tweet out. You know, I want to start a poll.
The thing is like, there's just so many sets that have still yet to be released that, you know, I definitely want to check out before I make some definitive answers here. But we've already talked about Dog Blood, dude. Absolutely smashed it. But, man, let me just quickly mention Oliver Heldens freaking destroying it on the main stage, dude. I mean, wow. I couldn't believe what I was hearing, because I've seen Oliver Heldens twice. You know, I saw him once at EDC Vegas 2017, and I saw him at EDC New York 2015. And I feel like he is doing this new sound, and he really is enjoying what he's doing with High Low, which is more of his, you know, tech house sound. And, dude, he played Charlotte DeWitt on the main stage.
Wow.
It was freaking amazing.
Wow.
It was an insane set. The dude takes great risks. And you know what? He's having fun up there, dude, and that's the best part. He is always having a good time, and I cannot wait to see Oliver Heldens again. So just an honorable mention to him, but Man, what a great way to kick off festival season, man. I'm happy that we're here.
So happy, man. And it just, you know, Ultra is just, it's a great starting point for a lot of festivals, you know.
For sure.
And everyone can agree that it's, you know, despite the logistical issues, I think everyone would agree that overall it was a good festival. And, you know, there's a lot for them to build up upon.
It's only going to keep getting better, folks. It's only going to keep getting better. And who knows, maybe we'll make another appearance at Ultra again. You know, speaking of festivals that we are going to, another big topic for us here is the EDC Vegas lineup, where Alec and I will be in attendance, and we can't wait to meet you guys. This is going to be freaking amazing. Guys, let me start by saying how freaking amazing this EDC Vegas lineup is. I mean, Alec, I think you'd agree with me here, dude. It is so diverse. There were some surprising sets that were announced. You know, some people feel like that there are some big names missing on the lineup, but I think that is made up for the fact that they have some very unique sets on here. That is also made up for the fact that, you know, we still don't know who's going to be playing on the art cars. And on top of that, I feel like this lineup is very, very well evenly spread out.
You know, I absolutely love the lineup. So, you know, we can go into some of the people there. But first, I have to say, you know, the one thing that I love about EDC Vegas is that they do give, you know, up-and-coming artists a real chance, right? And I absolutely love that. For instance, they're putting, you know, Bonnie and Clyde is going to be on a big stage. I mean, that's a huge deal for them, and is something that I don't...
Huge, dude.
Right?
Huge.
Like, absolutely huge.
I can't wait to see them.
Can't wait. I can't wait. Yeah, I'm definitely... You know, I want to say, I don't want to commit to going to see them just because there's so many good people I want to go see. I want to do my best to go see them. But let's rattle off a few of the people, you know, that they've got there. I mean, there's just so many. It's going to be unbelievable.
Let's do this, man. I mean, dude, I'm just quickly scrolling through this lineup right now. Alison in Wonderland, who I'm very excited to see. Bijou, Chris Lorenzo, Deadmau5 is coming through. You got Drezzo, who I cannot wait to see. Finally, Drezzo, dude.
Finally.
Eli Brown, Eric Prydz, of course, the freaking GOAT. Fisher, you know, Mala will be there. Dude, the list goes on and on. I mean, who are you looking forward to, man?
You know, I'm really looking forward to Idris Elba.
Yes, bro. Yes. I saw him at Creamfields. He smashed it. He is actually a very talented DJ.
Which is great to hear because, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, there's quite a few people who might be quite surprised by seeing him and didn't even realize he's a DJ. But if you go and look, you know, a little bit into his history, he's actually been into the rave scene for quite a while. You know, go type him up on YouTube.
Which is so cool.
Yeah, exactly. And you said he was good at Creamfields, right? Like, I haven't had the chance to see him.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
that's great.
He was.
James, I hope he plays some type of... Nah, there's no way he will, but if he had like a... He's not going to be the James Bond, so that's actually... No,
unfortunately not. He would have been a great great one for that, but yeah, he's just a talented guy, and he was having fun up there when I saw him at Creamfields, man. I can't wait to see the energy and the vibe that he brings to the Neon Garden this year. But bro, Io will be there, and I know we'd be very, very upset with ourselves if we do not mention this, okay? But Scream, back-to-back, Rusko. What the F? That's insane.
Yeah, you know, and it's I'm super, super pumped for this. I'm absolutely buzzing for it. What I'm interested in seeing is how old school are they going to go, right? You know, I know I've talked about it before, and I know a bunch of the, you know, the Brits and people are into the oldest, you know, school type of dubstep. I wonder how old they're going to go. I have a feeling it's going to be more a throwback to when Scream was going on with Benga on, like, you know, the Ultra main stage and type of things. So
oh, certainly.
I think that's probably going to be more the vibe. But even still, you know, I'm, you know, very much excited. Shout out to Scream and Rusko for doing that. I'm glad to see Scream back to doing a little bit of dubstep. I know he, you know, decided to take some quite a long break from it, but that's going to be absolutely amazing.
Yeah, love it, dude. It's going to be so great. And listeners, this is what we're talking about in terms of unique sets. Like, this is truly, truly a unique set. And God, I hope there's like nobody that I absolutely must see conflicting with this set, because I really do not want to miss this one. I'm this is like very, very high on my list here of sets that I need to check out. But just, dude, scrolling down more here on the list, dude, got Armin Hammer, You know, you got, let me see here. We got Brownies and Lemonade, who are hosting another stage, which I'm very, very excited for. Chris Lake is going to do a Black Book set, which is, you know, something hot, fresh off of his tour that he just did. Lucati, you got Cascade, you got Kazo, Tiesto will be there. Dude, Yoltron, I mean, dude, this is insane. I feel like I can go on and on, but I just don't want to keep rattling off the names. Like, people are going to get bored with that shit, you know? Oh, and also Adam Baer is hosting Neon Garden one night. Drum Code is going to be hosting Neon Garden, which I'm super, super pumped about. Ikali, Chami Mala, that's it. I'm done. I'm done talking names like this, dude. But I'm very excited, Alec. There's no other way for me to say it. I'm very, very excited.
You know, I totally agree with you, man. And just throwing one last person in there, because I know you're going to be sad when looking back if we didn't mention it, but 13 getting a big stage. I love that.
Huge, dude. Huge. He's going to be on the fucking circuit grounds, dude. This is huge. What a big deal.
Big deal for him, and it's a big deal for Midtempo General. To be honest, you know, I'm truly surprised that it's been this long, you know, until he's gotten what he's due, because he's put in the work, you know, and he's been releasing a bunch of songs recently. But, you know, I mean, he's had a collaboration out with Rez for what, like a couple of years already. So, like, he's been making moves for a while. And, I think right now, I think 2018 was the year of mid-tempo really starting to rise up, right? I mean, on this podcast, we've talked about some of the people, like, shout out, you know, Social Kid, Zabo, like all these people starting to come up. So I think this was just a really good time, and it's probably just pushed him up there. Like, he's definitely the biggest out of that, you know, of those people in that mid-tempo range that are taking inspiration from someone like Rez. But I'm super excited for 13 to be coming out. Shout out to him. That's going to be an amazing set. That's someone I definitely have to see. I don't know about you, Samir, but I'm going.
Yeah, I mean, it's another set that's high on my list as well, man. I think my biggest thing here is, like, so long as these people don't conflict with Eric Prydz, you will find me there pretty much. You know what I mean?
Right.
Eric Prydz is life. So, just, dude, fantastic, fantastic lineup. And I just love also, real quick, Alec, I just love how they drop the lineup as well, dude. Like, you know, when Pasquale does a, you know, puts out the mix. And so what he does is, you know, Pasquale will get onto his Night Owl radio show, and he will basically say, all right, guys, I'm going to play like 5 to 7 second snippets of all the artists that will be there broken down by stage. And then, like, the internet is just in a frenzy trying to figure out, wait, like, was that Zoo who will be there? Was that, you know, Diplo who will also be there? You know, like, they try to put all these names together, and then the next day, you know, Pasquale puts out the full lineup poster with all the confirmed artists. But just freaking amazing, and we are beyond stoked. And listeners, we will definitely be seeing you guys out there. Keep an eye for us. We'll be easy to find.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. So if you see us, definitely come chat with us. We'll be happy to go and party
for
with
sure.
You. But quickly, you know, something that I, you know, wanted to talk about very briefly. We don't have to talk too much detail about this, but Billboard has started doing a top 100 artists annual list for dance music. And I think this is just really interesting because, you know, having Billboard really do this officially and consistently now is a really big move, I think, for electronic music in general, because Billboard is quite, you know, it's a huge outlet, right? And it covers, you know, all the major genres. And I can't believe that, you know, this is actually, I think this is only the second time that they've done this.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, so, like, you know, I'll go a bit into quickly how they do it. You know, it's going to be definitely leaning toward more of the mainstream artists in the top, you know, 120. But that's just because what they do is that they do a fan poll, and then they also add it in. They don't really release how they do it, but they add in both the domestic and global statistics for tracks. You know, I believe that's things like album sales, streaming, track sales, radio airplay,
yeah,
as well as touring data, right? Like the show capacities, you know, their festival bookings, and really, I think, importantly, residencies. So that's how they kind of rank the people. And it makes sense. I mean, give me a guess of who you think the number one is going to be.
Oh, man.
I mean, don't think too hard about this one. It's really easy.
Yeah. I mean, if I really had to guess, dude, I would probably either say, like, the Chainsmokers or Marshmello.
It's Marshmello.
Is it? That doesn't surprise me at all. That really doesn't surprise me. But, you know, I mean, the dude grinds. He's got a huge following, so just good for him.
Definitely. So, like, you know, the top 10 is just, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of regular, you know, people you would expect. You've got Marshmello, then it goes Calvin Harris at 2, 3 is Chainsmokers, 4 is Zedd, and 5 is Kygo. The only one in the top 10 I'd say that would be of note and would be someone I wouldn't have thought about being there is, you know, David Guetta's at 10 and DJ Snake's at 9. I thought that was a little bit interesting. They put Diplo ahead.
I could see David Guetta like being in like the top 10, but I'm kind of surprised about DJ Snake.
About him being in the top 10 or being lower?
About him being in the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, I know, it's interesting, right? But I think that's probably because of the bookings that he's got, right? And he, I mean, also think about it. Taki Taki was just absolutely massive.
Huge song. Forgot about that one, but yeah, huge song.
So he's had a big one like that. Odessa comes in at 12, Flume at 14. I'm just kind of going through the people, you know, that would be interesting. Armin van Buuren at 16. I thought he would have been higher for sure. That's definitely a surprise for me.
Right.
And the biggest, I tell you, this is for me the biggest surprise, and I think it's great, it's interesting. At number 20 is Excision.
All right, that is super, super interesting, man. And I'm happy to hear that Excision is ranked so high.
I know, and he's ahead of both Hardwell and Dimitri Vegas and Like Mike.
Thank God. In terms of Dimitri Vegas and Like Mike, I hate those guys, man. But, dude, that's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, so, like, you know, that's kind of the thing. But I just wanted to point that out. I think that was a really interesting one. Another interesting one, this is the last one I'll mention here. It's going quite further down, but 41 is Solomon, and he's ahead of both Yellow Claw and RL Grime.
Nice. That's, you know what? I kind of like how Billboard has set up their algorithm in order to calculate these results. Like, I feel like, you know, obviously in the top 10, we're going to see the top 10 biggest names. Not a shock there. You really can't be mad. But, you know, I'm just really happy to see that some of these people are ranked as high up as they are. And I guess that's because, you know, Billboard is taking a look at not only, you know, fan favorites and, you know, feedback from just, you know, regular people, but also, like Alec has said, streaming data, touring data, you know, and releases. So I think this is great. I think this is a nice, well-rounded way of ranking electronic music artists.
Definitely. You know, and I'm just reiterating your point. I'm glad to see some of the people break the typical mainstream. You know, I think they've got their algorithm down pretty well. And from Billboard, I wouldn't expect anything other than that. And it, to be honest, it's fine, even if they weight it more towards the mainstream, because I totally understand that's what Billboard is really
about. Totally.
Totally. So
totally, dude.
Awesome, man. Well, that was good. But you have a awesome experience to tell us about. And I'm really, really excited for everyone to hear, because you were, you know, just raving about this one. No pun intended. Actually, it was a pun intended.
Yeah, but yeah. That was an awful pun, dude. you know, I posted about this on our Instagram page and our Twitter page and our Facebook, actually. And I got to say, just one thing that we love about doing this show is the fact that people will share the music that they like with us. And, you know, luckily, right after we released our first episode, you know, there was somebody who had commented on our Facebook page saying that you guys should check out Big Wild's album, Super Dream, and, you know, just talk about it on your show. And we did. I gave it, on episode 2, I gave it a Just Bought Tickets rating. And, dude, I'm so, so glad that, you know, Riley had introduced, that's the guy's name, Riley had introduced us to Big Wild, because, man, I am obsessed with his music, dude. I really, really am. He's signed to Odessa's Foreign Family Collective label, and, you know, there's a good reason why. I mean, his tracks are beautiful. His overall vibe is great. Just, I love the positive energy that he puts out. And on top of that, dude, just the show that he put on was amazing. He ended his Super Dream tour, which is the tour he did for his album called Super Dream. He ended his Super Dream tour in New York City, and it was a sold-out show, which I did not realize, but it was a sold-out show. And just a really, really talented guy, from, you know, playing the drum pads, for singing, guitar, you know, just and everything. Like, and he had, you know, other singers with him on stage, but he's a talented person, and it was a wonderful, wonderful show. And my girlfriend and I got a chance to celebrate our 3-year anniversary, you know, at his show, and it was just a really magical night. And I really just want to quickly say this, is that anybody who I've sent this album to, they have they have come back and said that this is really good. Like, I sent it to my brother. My brother had took a bus from, you know, the town that he lives in for 4 hours to come down to this show. And I sent it to a good friend of mine. My friend, like, the next day was like, all right, let's go. I'm buying tickets. And he never listened to Big Wild before. My girlfriend, who is not one to normally obsess over electronic music like I do, I mean, she has been listening to that album nonstop, dude. And it was just really, really great. And I cannot wait to see Big Wild again. Just so thank you, Big Wild, for an amazing, amazing evening. That was just a fantastic show.
Wow. You know, I tell you what, man, like, you've gotten me to say I've just bought tickets, because I now want to go see Big Wild. It sounds like an awesome time, you know, and I love
it
when...
man. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got to go, man. We'll go at some point for sure. Definitely go again. Just last note on that, but is he going to any... Do you know if he's going to any festivals, big festivals at all?
Yeah, Alec, actually, he is headlining a smaller festival, and I'm completely blanking on the name. The festival is really, really quite small, but yeah, he's on a couple of different lineups. I think he's also on the Shaky Beats lineup as well. So just, you know, he's doing a few festival appearances this summer, and listeners, if you guys get a chance, give this guy a shot. You might be pleasantly surprised if you're into that good vibes, chill, Odessa-like music. But he's not a copycat of Odessa. He really does have his own true unique sound.
That's great. Awesome, man. Well, thank you for that. And shout out to Big Wild for, you know, Samir's a hard man to please. So
for sure. Yeah, it's hard to make me feel feels, but I felt those feels. So thank you for
awesome.
That.
That's awesome. Well, wow. I tell you what, I'm so pumped and stoked, buzz, however you want to call it, to have these two artists be on you know, our upcoming artist spotlight. Shout out to Trip Trop and Aki for wanting to come on, and thank you both for well, actually three, because Trip Trop's a you know, the duo brothers.
Yeah,
and Aki's just the solo gal that we saw open up for Charmy, who was just absolutely blew us away. I'm
for
so
sure.
excited.
She's
to,
so nice.
Oh, God,
she's
yeah.
She's a nice person.
It's unbelievable. Just great people. It's nice, so nice to see people who, you know, are making music and they're genuinely great people. I mean, all three of them are just, you know, fantastic people. So we're definitely very excited to have them coming on soon.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm very excited as well. So listeners, you know, keep an eye out for our upcoming artist spotlights. You know, we hope you guys like those episodes. They're really, really fun to do. And it's just fun to talk to the people who make music and really make this scene great. And just, you know, I'm very, very excited to have these folks on the show with us. But wow, man, that was a good news and culture section, man. Just a lot of good stuff to talk about there for our 10th episode. But let's switch our gears here, man. We're gonna do it, man. We're gonna talk about what really grinds our gears. We're gonna talk about the anti-plur moment.
Oof.
Alec,
man. Whew. Okay, I'm taking a breath here. I'm going to get quite heated about this one. And I know that you feel quite the same way. But, you know, I'll have a little bit of an attack at this first, and then you'll follow up with it, I'm sure.
All right, sounds good.
Because we both definitely really grind our gears. All right, people. So this happened when, you know, EDC dropped. When the lineup for EDC dropped, people, I just saw a bunch of people, you know, bitching and moaning and complaining about the lineup. And, you know, it just grinds my gears because, you know, first of all, it's like, you know, all the complaints kind of tend to revolve around the same thing. Oh, where's, you know, Marshmello types? Oh, where's Chainsmokers types? And it just seems like, to me, it's a shame because people are quite siloed in what they like and who they want to see. And, you know, EDC put a lot of work into this, and the lineup, by all accounts, is a fantastic lineup. And, you know, sure, it's not the best, you know, best for everybody, right? If you want to see all the radio people, your big radio hits. But you know what? Go out and try something new. Or if you're not, if you don't want to go anymore and you've already bought tickets, sell them. But don't complain and try bring down the mood and the excitement for everyone else. Because I was going through the Facebook group and so many people were complaining about it. And you know, it's just one, it's not fair to the artists because you know, you don't necessarily like them doesn't mean that they're not talented. And trust me, like, you know, I know that Samir and I, you know, are not always the kindest, shall we say, to certain, you know, DJs, cough, cough, chain smokers.
And for sure.
People who
for
are sure, like, but dude. You know what? We will say that they're talented, and we're never going to tell somebody, you know,
absolutely do not go see them. You know, we'll always tell people to give everybody a shot, and we appreciate all types of talent, even if it's not just for us. So, you know, if you want to complain about it, sure, but you know, we're not going to go on and start moaning about how the Chainsmokers are closing out Ultra as the lineup drops. Like, don't ruin the vibe for people. If you don't want to, just go sell your ticket away, but don't ruin it for people, because you know what, there's a lot of talented people going, and I absolutely love pretty much, you know, there's some people I don't know, but I love the lineup this year. I think this is even better than when we went Samir, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, Alec, completely agreed, and you've just really hit this on the head, man. I mean, but this extends beyond just like the EDC Vegas lineup. This extends to pretty much every lineup that drops, you know, and it's incredibly, incredibly frustrating to see people say like, where's this artist? Where's that artist? You know, where's so-and-so? Look, no lineup is going to have every single artist that you are going to want to see. You have your own personal preferences. I have my own personal preferences. This other person, that person, that person, they all have their own personal preferences, okay? There is not going to be ever in your life a single lineup that will cater to every person's personal preferences. It's just not going to happen. You know what I mean? And people will sometimes take rumors that they hear or speculation, and they'll truly, truly extrapolate it out, you know, and, you know, they'll just like be like, oh, you know, this person was supposed to be on the lineup. No, they weren't. No, they were not. Okay. Unless that artist specifically said that they were going to be on the lineup, they were not ever confirmed. So don't be surprised if they were not announced or they were announced. It's just not fair to yourself or to the people around you. You know, and Alec, you made a fantastic point here. Either sell your ticket or try some new music. I mean, that's what's so great about music festivals, no matter the genre, right? And that's what's so great about shows that we go to, because we have openers to not only set the mood, but we also have them to teach us and show us new music. Yep. And it's so, so frustrating to see people bitching about lineups when they drop, because nothing will ever be perfect. So don't have that expectation. Go into it with an open mind, or if it's really not something that is you know, suitable to your taste, sell your damn ticket and cancel your trip. It's not a big deal. We're not going to miss you, all right? It's just more space to dance. That's it. That's all I got to say on that.
Yeah, man. Great follow-up there, as I knew. You always have great follow-ups to these type of things. We're always on the same page.
Thanks,
you
dude.
And I love it. Absolutely love it. But, you know, I think to clarify and to wrap this anti-plur moment up, you know, just give things a new try. You know, if you don't like it, then you don't have to go. But don't try bring everybody down with these kind of, you know, open-ended Facebook posts saying, oh, why isn't so-and-so coming? Like, they're not coming. You know, it's
right.
They're just not. And I get people's disappointment. I do. I understand that. But again, I think, you know, I wouldn't have a go at EDC for this. If Ultra, right, decided to not have the Chainsmokers or any real big mainstream acts at all and just went kind of more underground, I could understand people complaining, because Ultra, you know, has done a very good job of cultivating this, you know, big room house type of vibe, a more mainstream type of vibe, because that's what, you know, big room is just more mainstream in the EDM world right now, currently. Whereas EDC has never really been that way. You know, so I understand that it's a big festival, but, you know, and they have some big headliners, sure. But the focus, actually, I personally think, is on not on the headliners, but is more on the kind of mid-tier in terms of popularity artists and the diversity of music. So
yes,
when you're going to EDC totally. Las Vegas, that's what you've got to expect. And that's the only expectation that EDC has ever set. They've never done anything to convince you otherwise. Like, you know, maybe your friend told you, oh, there's all these big people going. Sure, but big is relative to, you know, it's to the ears of the beholder rather than the eyes of the beholder. But, you know, I think you just need to go in with proper expectations and just be ready to explore new music, or don't be. And then that's fine. You don't have to. So there we go.
Love it. Love it, dude. That was great. And listeners, you know, these are the opinions that Alec and I hold, and you know, we hopefully, you know, you maybe see this issue a different way if you know you're one of those folks that says, ugh, you know, I don't like the lineup, or like, why isn't this person on the lineup? You know, no lineup will be perfect, and we hope you guys enjoy anyways, for real.
Yeah, exactly.
But dude, that was a good anti-plur moment, man. I'm actually really happy we talked about that.
Me too. I'm happy we got the negativity out.
For sure, for sure. Well, maybe not, because we're about to go to the what are we listening to section. That was a good segue, right? You like that? You like what I did there?
Oh, yeah, I like that a lot.
Alec had talked about on the top of the show that we are going to be talking about sets from Ultra Miami, and we have selected two sets that we have both listened to from Ultra 2019, and for this week's What Are We Listening To section, we're going to review them. We're going to talk about them. So the first set that we want to talk about here is the Chainsmokers set from Ultra 2019. It's now on YouTube, and it's on SoundCloud, and we'll have a link to the set in our show notes, so you guys can definitely go check that out there if you haven't listened to it yet. But all right, Alec, what did you think, man? What's up?
Samir, I really wish that I had really thought about this segue, because I would have had this in the extension of the anti-player moment, but let's extend it anyway. Chainsmokers, I'm sure you guys are really, you guys are very talented, no doubts about that, but it's just something about your DJ sets just makes me want to like tear my hair out. First of all, Andrew, Drew, whatever you want to go by, why are you singing, man? Why are you singing on top of it? I mean, it just didn't it didn't work. I don't get it. I really don't understand. I mean, does anybody tell him that this doesn't work? I don't know. I mean, it doesn't. To be honest, it just really doesn't work very well. And I don't know if I'm being unfair, because I haven't heard him sing too many other times live, but that just didn't really work.
So baby, pull me closer in the backseat of you, that I know you can't afford. Bite that tattoo on you, pull the sheets right off the hold that mattress that you stole from your roommate back in Baltimore.
Second of all, I don't know what's happened, but since the last Ultra that we went to, and maybe it was a festival or two before that, the Chainsmokers have fundamentally changed the way that they do their live sets. Now, instead of kind of sticking to their style and to the things that they produce, they're throwing these random trap songs into the set. And so they'll do three, like the whole flow goes like this. It's like three hard songs with like hard trap, and then into their like, to be honest, a pretty shitty transition into their lighter song where people start singing and they're singing. And then they go back to these hard random songs again. But it's like this just really isn't them, and it doesn't really make sense. And even though they may say, oh, well, we're starting to produce these type of things, a couple of those harder songs that they have released, under their Chainsmokers alias has been with other people such as like Azar. And clearly the drop is more of Azar's influence. I can't remember the name of the song right now, but they played it. And it's a sick drop, but it's just like with the vocals and with everything else, it doesn't make any sense. And so it just really pisses me off, because it's like they're closing Ultra out as a festival. David Guetta just came on and was talking about how he wanted to take people through a journey of different types of music, and he did, it was actually a very good set, and I have to give props to him for that. It was very good. But then the Chainsmokers come on and they're just mashing together all these different songs that just don't seem like they work together. There's no flow. And as my girlfriend said, who actually likes the Chainsmokers a lot, they don't really have a definitive style when playing their sets, and that's what bugs me about it, just because it's like I'd almost prefer they go back to what they used to do before. Anyway, I don't know about you, Samir, but that's kind of like my take on it.
Dude, I completely agree with you. First of all, I like some of the songs that the Chainsmokers throws down in their sets, because they do go hard, man. They do go hard, and they're great tracks, but we've talked about this before on the show. I feel like there's such a big disconnect between what they release and what they actually play live, number one. And so that leads to like completely disassociated with each other. But, they'll act like they go super, super hard on stage, at Ultra, but then they'll go on tour with 5 Seconds of Summer. They'll put out an album like Memories Do Not Open. It doesn't make any sense, dude. And then you're absolutely right. Drew is not a good singer live, okay? I mean, when he was singing Closer, it was awful. I mean, it was awful to hear. And I hate to say that. I really, really do. I really hate to rag on somebody like this. But come on, man. Just let the vocals from the actual track itself play out. At least they're edited. They're tuned a little bit more. And they just sound better. On top of that, Drew is incredibly, incredibly aggressive on the mic. All right. Not only is he constantly picking up the mic, but Bro, I counted in one sentence, he said fuck, the word fuck, four times.
What's from Miami? I don't know if you fucking know this, but we came to burn this motherfucker down to the ground tonight. If you're feeling like tonight is your fucking night, and you're out here with your best fucking friend, let me fucking...
Four times in one sentence. Like, I know that you're hyped, dude. I completely get it, but you got to chill. You seriously got to chill. Like... just take it easy, take a deep breath, get off the mic a little bit, and just turn down the aggressiveness, man. Like, you have really just need to settle down a little bit, you know? Like, is that how you're going to perform and how you're going to act on the 5 Seconds of Summer tour that you're doing? Like, I don't know. Like, it's just annoying to hear every single time you're about to drop a song, you're telling me to put my hands up, or you're telling me to tell my mother that you guys go hard. Look, I talk to my mother every day, and you're definitely not going to be in the conversation, okay? So don't tell me to do that. It's just so ridiculous. But, you know, those are my thoughts on the Chase Booker set from Ultra 2019. But, bro, real quick, man, let's switch gears, all right? Let's reverse this shit, and let's talk about Dog Blood, all right, who absolutely smashed it at Ultra this year. I mean, I think this is going to be a big year for Dog Blood, dude. I think we're going to be seeing a few more Dog Blood appearances. They did the Brownies Lemonade Miami Music Week party, and Skrillex and Boys Noize, who comprised Dog Blood, had also played at Ultra 2019 on the worldwide stage and absolutely tore that stage down. Wow. I mean, what did you think, Alec? It was freaking insane, dude.
No, I was, you know, I remember texting you as I was watching the live stream, and it was just like, you know, my Lord, like they it was just unbelievable. You know, it was just such a great, you know, I wish they, you know, obviously the stream couldn't, but I wish the stream had the whole set there. But it was just, it was just so great to see, you know, one Skrillex back out, you know, truly back out in some shape or form in the festival circuit. And Dog Blood back again. I mean, that was just awesome, right? I mean, I genuinely thought when we saw them close Webster Hall in New York that that would be the last time that we would get to see Dog Blood. But
yeah, I have hope now.
Yeah, I do. I mean, at one point at the beginning, I don't know if you caught this, but he said that, and I quote, he's setting the tone for the rest of the year. This is what Skrillex said on the mic before it dropped. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, Alec, I don't know what that means. I really, really don't know what that means. And but I'm excited to see what that means. You know, I mean, like I said, we just got a Dog Blood release that we just talked about at the top of the show. And it's just awesome to see that these guys hopefully are going to be touring more and more together, because I need a Dog Blood set in my life. I need it, because their track lists are extremely diverse. You know, and as an Indian person, you know, when I heard Mundian Tu Bachke come on, which is an Indian song, and you guys might know the beat from it from Jay-Z's song Beware of the Boys, they played a Psytrance remix of that song. And, I mean, that's right then and there is when it completely cemented it for me, that their track selection is freaking insane. These guys are constantly trying new things, but they're doing it in a great way. They make it all work very cohesively. This set is just next level, and I'm very happy we got a chance to hear it.
Definitely, man, this was great. You know, Dog Blood, shout out to you guys, can't wait to see what you're doing the rest of this year.
For sure, man, for sure. But should we move into rating these songs or these sets real quick?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm down.
Yeah, let me quickly just recap our rating scale here that we have on Beyond the Beats. And listeners, if you guys have tuned into a previous episode, it's the same rating scale. You can go ahead and skip this section a little bit. New listeners, what up? Thanks for joining us. This is how we rate our songs here on Beyond the Beats. There are 5 different levels, levels 1 through 5, 1 being the lowest and 5 being the highest. And we call level 1, one listen. And that's where Alec and I will probably just take a piece of music, take a set or an album or a single release, and that'll probably be the only time that we listen to that song. But we encourage our listeners to also give it a listen and make your own opinion, so we call it one listen. Level 2 is called background noise, and it's when, you know, a piece of music comes on, it's just there in the background. It's just keeping you company while you cook or do other things. You know, you're not going to make an active attempt to change it. Level 3 is what we call turn it up. It's when a piece of music comes on in your car and you grab that stereo knob and you just rip it. You turn it all the way up. So level 3 is turn it up. Level 4 is just bought tickets, pretty self-explanatory, but it's when a piece of music comes on and it, you know, that piece of music compels you to want to buy tickets to see that artist when they come to your city next. And level 5 is speechless. It's when you listen to a piece of music and it's just you and the music and everything else melts away. That's level 5. So real quick recap. Level 1 is one listen. Level 2 is background noise. Level 3 is turn it up. Level 4, just bought tickets. And level 5, speechless. Alec, what did you think of the Chainsmokers live at Ultra 2019 closing set? They closed out the festival. What did you think?
You know, man, I think this is the first time I've actually done this on the podcast to date, but I'm giving it a one listen.
Bro, that is the first time you've done this. Wow.
Yeah, just I don't
well
really...
Well deserving,
you know,
though.
Yeah, man, I mean, I've already, you know, gone into the Chainsmokers enough and stuff. I have nothing really more to say. It's just a one listen. You know, not for me. Obviously, yeah. if it's for some people, that's great. But just for me, it's just personally not what I'd like to go see.
Yeah, Alec, I'm 100% in agreement with you, dude. And, you know, I wish we had like a level 0 because I would give it that if possible. But this is straight up, dude, level 1. This is a one listen for me. And I was, you know, I was kind of thinking in my head, like, what would make this next level for me? Like, what would make this like background noise? Look, I can deal with Drew's shitty singing, fine, because he doesn't sing throughout the set. But the fact that he talks so much throughout the set, it's like he's reading a goddamn ebook, dude. It's ridiculous, all right? But the fact that he's talking so much throughout the set is what truly makes this a level 1 for me. If he cut down on his mic time, you know, if he stuck to pretty much just singing on the few tracks that he's on and, you know, maybe hyping up the crowd every once in a while, I'd give it a background noise, you know? I'd give it a background noise, but I can't. I really just can't. It's a level 1, one listen.
Yeah, that's a very good point there, you know? And actually, you know, I'm going to give him some credit. I think they did pretty well with the production. I like their creativity. See, there's my positive note on their set.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, dude, some of their mashups are actually really, really good. Completely agree with you. And they do have good track selection, man. I'm not going to lie. Like, they do really, you know, drop some heavy hitters.
I disagree with the track selection.
What's that? Oh, you're disagreeing with me?
Yeah.
It's not, it doesn't flow very well into each other. Like, I feel like this set is almost like broken apart by like that one slow song like you mentioned that they throw in there.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well.
Yeah.
There we go for the Chainsmokers, Samir's new favorite band. Moving forward.
Oh, dude, no. Not this again.
Moving up on for Dog Blood, what are you going to give that set, man?
Oh, my God. All right. I'm in the hot seat right now. All right, Alec, I'm going to do it.
Okay. What? No.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm giving it a speechless.
What? Wow.
Yeah, I'm giving it a speechless, dude. I'm seriously going to give it a speechless, and I'll tell you why, all right?
Okay.
It's not perfect, right? So level 5 doesn't necessarily mean that it's perfect, because there were points in the set where I feel like Skrillex could have also laid off on the mic, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the track selection is unparalleled. Okay, the creativity knows no bounds. And on top of that, the production in the set, from what I could tell by the live stream, was nuts, dude. I mean, they've really, really set the vibe. And there were points, you know, when I was listening to the set where, like, I wish I was, like, next to you or next to somebody else. Like, I wish I was in a crowd so I can turn to you or turn to someone and be like, did you just fucking hear that? Because... Yeah. This set is nuts. It's crazy, and I really hope we get a good high-quality recording of it. But in the meantime, listeners, you guys can find that link in the show notes. But, Alec, what did you think, dude?
You know, I tell you what, Samir, I'm not quite there with you on the speechless factor. I'm very, very picky with my... I don't believe I've actually given one out yet, but I'm going to go with just bought tickets. To be honest, though, here's the kind of like the disclaimer I'll put on that rating. If I was there in person, I might give it a speechless. To be perfectly honest, you know, because I haven't heard a high quality recording and I wasn't quite there. I don't think I would give it a speechless, but maybe, just maybe, that might change if I was there in person. But for me, it's just a level 4 out of 5. Just bought tickets. I mean, absolutely incredible
for sure.
Set.
there's no real reason why it's not Speechless, except I kind of reserve Speechless for something that, you know, truly, utterly makes my jaw drop. And, you know, just it wasn't quite there for me, but it was, you know, if there were decibel points, which I know we don't do, it would be very high, a very high four. There you go.
Love it, dude.
Woo.
Love it. Yeah. Good. This is good. Like we really had like completely like polarizing ends of the spectrum here for the what are we listening to section. But dude, let's switch gears. Let's talk about probably our favorite section of the show here, the artists that we're watching. Alec, bro, you found somebody who is absolutely killing it, man. Absolutely killing it.
Yeah, so this artist is, you know, it's, as you were saying to me, absolutely killing it at the moment. It's somebody who might be, is just, you know, again, this week, a little bit larger than what we normally go after, but not that much. And somebody I'm incredibly surprised isn't bigger yet. I really don't understand. So the artist I'm talking about is Slooze. On SoundCloud, he's got about, I think it's like 6,500 followers. On Instagram, he's only got around 2,000 followers. And it's just amazing to me because his actual songs, though, and his tracks, specifically his flips, have gotten a lot of attention. You know, this guy, he's a trap type of guy, mid-tempo type of guy, probably more mid-tempo than anything. And I've got a flip of a very famous song here I'd love to play a little bit of a clip of. This is Alan Walker's Faded, and it's the Slooze flip on that. Take a listen.
You know, dude, it's wow. I mean, here's the thing, man. I've heard Alan Walker's Faded many, many times. I mean, it was huge, you know, circa, you know, 2017 festival circuit, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just never a song that really grabbed me all that much, you know what I mean? But this, I really, really, really like this flip a lot. Like, I feel like it's so fresh and it's so unique. Just fantastic job to Slooze on this, man. I know he's got a couple of other flips too that just absolutely slap.
Yeah, I mean, he's got so many great flips. I mean, he's done flips for Rez, even for Virtual Self. I mean, the list goes on and on. You've got to check out his SoundCloud. You know, and I'm just, you know, I think this is, you know, if I had to make a prediction, I think 2019 is going to be a very, very big year for Slooze. Your EDM, the outlet, actually already had named him one of the top 40 artists to watch.
Nice.
In 2019.
Huge, dude.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm still a little bit surprised why he hasn't, you know, really, truly blown up a lot. Because, I mean, these songs, though, do have a lot of hits. So I think it's really him just coming out with more originals. I know he's been releasing some. So this guy is just, I cannot wait to see Slooze. There's another link that I will put in the show notes because I just came across this. But 1788L recently played his an unreleased collaboration he has with Slooze at the Get Lucky Festival in Salt Lake City. So on our show notes, definitely go check that out too. I mean, it's an absolute banger, man. I mean, I cannot wait to see this guy. I don't know about you, but this is somebody I have to go see.
For sure. For sure, dude. Yeah, if he comes to New York City anytime soon, or if he's at a festival that I'm attending, I'll definitely make it a point to go see him. And yeah, I'm really, really glad we got a chance to talk about him on the show. So, yeah.
Definitely, awesome. Man. But, you know, let's go to your guy because this was something, yeah. You know, I'll let you go into this, but I'm really pumped about this guy too.
Yeah, me too, dude. I'm very, very excited to be talking about this guy. And I hope I'm saying his name right. You know, listeners, if you guys have tuned to previous episodes, you guys know that we have some trouble saying names sometimes of the artists that we're mentioning. But I want to talk about Kitone, K-I-T-O-N-E. It's either Kitone or Kitone. You know, Kitone, if you're listening to this episode, definitely let us know how to say your name. It's this guy from Russia. He's got 1,900 followers on SoundCloud. On Spotify, he's got 589 monthly listeners. On Instagram, he's got about 5,200 followers. So, relatively unknown person. And, man, I'm so happy that I found him, and I found him in a completely disconnected way from Ultra, but you'll see how this is going to relate back to Ultra. I want to play you this song. It's called Move to the Sound. Here it is. Check it out. Funk Accelerator. Accelerator.
man, I love this song so much.
Dude, you know what's crazy about this song is the fact that Chami opened his set for Ultra 2019 with this song.
No
way.
Can
you believe that?
No. Are you serious?
Dude, dead ass, 100% serious. He opened his set with this song, Move to the Sound.
Wow.
It's released on Noir Sur Blanc Records, which we had talked about actually on the last episode. You know, another, you know, great, you know, it's a French record label, but the artist here is Russian, and great G House. But I mean, you could just hear the details in this song. That he's a master of just putting all these elements together and just making it all extremely, extremely cohesive, but keeping the song interesting as well. You know, sometimes people complain that house music gets a little bit boring, it gets a little bit repetitive, but I feel like this song and many of his other releases as well, they just stay fresh. They always, always sound good. And listeners, we're going to have a link to his SoundCloud and this song in our show notes, but just a fantastic track. And Kitone, we cannot wait to see what you do next. I think this is gonna be a big year for you, and this, the fact that Chami had opened his set, his Ultra 2019 set, with your song is huge. So congratulations on that, and we're very excited.
That is a huge deal. We're pumped for you. That, what a great find, Samir. Well done on that. I can't believe that it just so happened to turn out that, you know, Chami opened with that. I mean, that's pretty...
completely unrelated. Like, I did not even know that Chami had played his song when I found him on, you know, on SoundCloud. But then I checked out his Instagram and I saw his story, and he said that Chami had started his set with his song. And it's confirmed. It's true. I listened to the set. It is true. That song is in there. It's crazy, dude. I couldn't believe it.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah. It's huge. Yeah, but man, great episode 10. I mean, this is a milestone. I mean, yeah, it's a bit more of an extended episode, but we had a lot of stuff to talk about here, and I'm just so pumped that we got to this milestone. Dude, double digits. We're on the board, baby.
I know. I can't believe it, you know, and you know, here's to at least 10 more, and hopefully more. We've got a lot of plans here on Beyond the Beats, a lot of stuff we want to bring. You know, we're really just getting started, and I mean that. You know, got a lot of newer features we're going to be rolling out. Big plans here. You know, the sky's really the limit. We just have to, you know, see how far we can go with this.
For sure. And if you guys are enjoying the show, you know, please feel free to interact with us, or, you know, the best thing you can do for our podcast is to share it with your friends. Really, it is. You know, drop a rating, drop a review, but we really appreciate everyone's support of the show so far. It really, really means a lot to us. So thank you guys. We're very close to breaking 1,000 plays, by the way. Very, very close. So we're almost there. And so thank you guys. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, I think that wraps it up, unless you have something more to add, Samir. I think that's it for episode 10.
I'm good to go, bro. I'm good to go. And we will talk to everybody next week.
Indeed. All right, guys. Well, thank you again for tuning in. Please follow us on Instagram. You can see that in the show notes. We're at btb.pod. Give us a rating if you like it. You don't have to, but if you like it, if you dislike it, whatever you want, give us a rating of some sort. That'd be great on Apple Podcasts. You could find all of our streaming things through the Instagram profile, and we'll talk to you guys next week for episode 11. Thank you again.
All right. Peace.